members. Today we are visited by the Maastricht Commission and also the Independent Police Investigation Directorate. Actually, it is a formal introduction by representatives of the Maastricht Commission and briefings on its role and functions in terms of the Maastricht Act of 1993. It is, as a committee, our first meeting. That's why we feel that they need to come and introduce themselves to this committee. So you are most welcome, representatives of the Maastricht Commission. I don't know whether the independent police investigation are here. Not yet. Okay, thank you. You are most welcome by the committee. Feel free. Introduce yourself. And we are those members. They want to work with you. They want to know you. They want to understand exactly what you are doing. Then we can carry the mandate that we are given together to take South Africa forward and to deliver to those who elected us to be here. For those few words, I want to welcome you guys. Take care and don't worry about anything. You are home. You are home. Honorable members, I don't want to waste your time because I know your program is tight. First of all, I want to know the apologies, Secretary.
Chairperson, received no apologies, Chairperson.
Oh, no apologies. Everybody's here. Oh, 100%. This is a committee. That committed to do the work. You can see. Thank you. Let's take number three. Members, and I wonder whether we'll start from you, Maastricht, to introduce your team, yourself, then therefore the members will introduce themselves. Thank you. Thank you.
Honorable Chairperson, thank you very much. Let me just introduce myself. My name is Daniel Schoeman. I'm the Secretary of the Magistrates Commission. I'm a fully fledged public servant. I'm employed by the Department of Justice and Correctional Services, and I've been designated as Secretary to the Commission in 1997, and ever since I have served in this position. My colleague next to me is Mr. Hans Meyer. He is a magistrate. He is not a public servant. He is one of the magistrates who is assisting the Magistrates Commission with misconduct matters, ethics matters regarding magistrates. It's a special component which is assisting the Commission with this task. May I thank you, Honorable Chairperson, for the invitation. It's a privilege to be here and an honor to be here. And may I also, from the Chairperson of the Magistrates Commission, Judge Lahori, convey to you his best wishes to you and your committee. May I proceed with the
start for introduction, that's all done. Good morning, Honourable Chair and members. My name is Brendan Williams. I'm from the Office of the Deputy Minister, John Jeffrey. We just so observe, and with me today is Ms. Lobanya. Well, he's an intern, Mr. Chairperson. He actually starts today, so just to see that he can see the workings of the Select Committee as well. So we're just here to observe.
Okay. My name is Domifami Kimbi. I'm the member of this committee. Thank you.
My name is Lewin Zimande, from KZN, representing the Bad Province. Good to see my colleagues from the Mysore Commission. In the previous term, I was part of the Mysore Commission. I've since abandoned them, but glad that I'm meeting them again. I'm not completely lost, and my greetings to the judge as well as everybody at the Magistrate Commission. We had a good time in the previous term. Thank you, Chair.
The ball must roll.
Thank you very much, Chair. My name is Jihad Mohab. I'm representing for State in the Select Committee and also a member of the National Council of Provinces.
My name is Setamarawa Tereza. I'm coming from Limpopo, member of the National Council of Provinces, on the other foot in chairing petition and executive undertaking. Thank you very much.
Good morning. Welcome, Honorable Dobosan. My name is Jean Julius, from Gauteng Province.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is George Michalakis. I represent the Free State in the NCOP, and I'm also fortunate enough to be a member of the Commission as well.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Morgan Chetty, and I come from KZN. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson. My name is Moses Nsanga, the member of the Select Committee and also designated member by Parliament to serve in the Mysore Commission. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Gershwin Dixon. I'm the secretary to the committee.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Andy van der Berg, president of the committee.
Thank you very much. Then I think now we can hand it over to you to brief us. Who are you? What are you? What is your role? And all the things that the members can. Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. A brief overview of the business of the Magistrates Commission. It's an independent statutory body that was established in terms of the Magistrates Act number 90 of 1993. The first meeting took place December 1993. And it comprises of 27 members in total. It is chaired by a judge, Judge Lahori, who is currently serving his second term as chairperson of the commission. And the rest of the composition, very briefly, is the minister or his nominee. The minister has been delegated or nominated the deputy minister to present him at meetings of the commission. Then two regional magistrates, two magistrates with the rank of chief magistrate, two magistrates who do not hold the rank of regional magistrate or chief magistrate. So in total, there are six magistrates out of the 27 members, two practicing advocates, two practicing attorneys, one teacher of law, currently the head of Justice College, but the act will soon be changed because Justice College is no longer involved with the training of judicial officers. Sajay, the South African Judicial Education Institute, has taken over that responsibility. The department is in the process of amending the act accordingly. Then four persons designated by the National Assembly from among its members, four permanent delegates to the NCOP, and lastly, five fit and proper persons appointed by the President in consultation with Cabinet, at least two of whom shall not be involved in the administration of justice or the practice of law in the ordinary course of business. As I said, the commission comprises of 27 members. If I am not mistaken, it's the biggest commission in terms of current legislation. It's bigger than the Judicial Service Commission. Now, the Magistrates Act, the functions and the objectives of the Magistrates Commission is contained in the Magistrates Act. And since we've been allocated 30 minutes, I don't want to go into too much detail unless more information is required by you, Honorable Chairperson. The main function of the Magistrates Commission, in terms of its mandate, should be clear if I read from the preamble of the Act. It reads as follows: to ensure that the appointment, promotion, transfer, or discharge of all disciplinary steps against judicial officers in the lower courts take place without favor or prejudice, and that the applicable laws and administrative directions in connection with such action are applied uniformly and correctly. Maybe I must just interrupt myself at this stage to reiterate the fact that the Magistrates Commission is a controlling body over magistrates only and has no jurisdiction to deal with any matter relating to judges. They have their own statutory body, known as the Judicial Service Commission. I continue from the preamble: to ensure that no influencing or victimization of judicial officers in the lower courts takes place, to endeavor to promote the continuous training of judicial officers in the respective lower courts, and to make recommendations in this regard to the Minister. I already indicated that Sajay has to a large extent now taken over this responsibility. The Commission, however, can advise Sajay on any training issues. I continue: to compile a code of conduct for judicial officers in the lower courts. Such a code has been compiled and is applied by the Magistrates Commission. And to advise the Minister and make recommendations to him or her regarding the administrative matters applicable to magistrates, including proposals regarding legislation purporting to regulate the conditions of service and relevant matters regarding magistrates separately, to carry out investigations and make recommendations to the Minister regarding the suspension of magistrates, to advise the Minister or to make recommendations to him or her regarding the requirements for appointment and the appointment of judicial officers in the respective lower courts, and lastly, to advise the Minister or to make recommendations to him or her or to report to the Minister for the information of Parliament regarding any matter which, in the opinion of the Commission, is of interest for 1. The independence of the dispensing of justice, and 2. The efficiency of the administration of justice. discussed this in the lower courts. For the Commission to perform its functions, the Commission has, in terms of the existing legislation, has established a number of committees. Firstly, since the Commission only meets once every quarter, and since there are urgent matters to be dealt with on an almost daily basis, an executive committee of the Magistrates Commission was established to deal with very urgent issues which cannot wait until the next meeting of the Commission. The executive committee is chaired by Judge McCauley, who is the chairperson of the Commission, and comprises of the chairpersons of the other five subcommittees of the Commission. Those subcommittees are the Appointments Committee, which deals with the recruitment as far as the filling of posts of judicial officers is concerned. Secondly, the Ethics Committee, which deals with misconduct matters as envisaged in terms of Regulation 25 and 26 of the regulations for magistrates. We have a committee referred to as the Grievances and Service Conditions Committee, dealing with grievances lodged by magistrates regarding any issues pertaining to their service conditions. We very recently disbanded the Training Committee in view of the role of subject. And lastly, the Commission has a committee referred to as the Utilization Committee, which deals with recommendations for the creation or the abolishment of posts of judicial officer within the lower courts. Those are the committees which have been established by the Magistrates Commission to assist it with its task. The Commission is primarily an advisory body in terms of the relevant legislation. The most important business of the Commission are threefold. The first one is to attend to the recruitment processes for the filling of posts of judicial officer within the lower courts. For the information of the members, the Commission is currently busy with the shortlisting and interviewing for the filling of a total of 308 posts of judicial officer, which were advertised at the end of last year on the various levels. There are five levels of magistrates within the lower courts, being the regional court president level, regional magistrate level, chief magistrate level, senior magistrate level, and lastly, the level of magistrate. The recruitment process is very, very important and involves the advertising, shortlisting, and interviewing of prospective candidates. The position of magistrate is a sought-after position to confirm that. I would like to share with you, Honorable Chairperson, that we have, in reaction to the last advertisement of the Commission, received 2,500 plus applications by legally qualified applicants for the 308 posts which were advertised. The Commission is now, with the assistance of its Appointments Committee, busy with this recruitment process and will do its level best to ensure that all these positions are filled during this financial year. Recommendations. The Magistrates Commission cannot appoint magistrates. That is the function of the Minister of Justice. Magistrates Commission can only make recommendations regarding the suitability of candidates for appointment to specific positions. for that purpose and to ensure that the minister does not become a rubber stamp, it is policy that the Magistrates Commission must submit to the minister as far as possible at least 3 names in rank order of candidates regarded as suitable for appointment to a specific post. It then leaves a discretion for the minister to decide which candidate to appoint. The final appointments are done by the minister, whereafter magistrates will as soon as possible assume duty at the new stations. That is one of the three most important functions of the commission. The second function of the commission is to deal with complaints against magistrates. And unfortunately, since there are 2,024 funded posts of judicial officer within the lower courts, Honorable Chairperson, your committee will realize that on an almost daily basis we receive complaints from members of the public against magistrates. It ranges from complaints against the demeanor of a judicial officer, but most of the complaints are unfortunately complaints from illiterate people who complain with the commission because they are unhappy with a judgment or a sentence which was imposed or a ruling which was made by a judicial officer. And we then from our side do our level best to explain to them the correct procedure to follow if you want to challenge the decision which was taken by a judicial officer. Other complaints against magistrates are dealt with by the Ethics Committee. The Ethics Committee comprises of members of the Commission, but does not include any member of Parliament. The reason is that the recommendations regarding the suspension of magistrates, or the provisional suspension of magistrates, or the removal from office of magistrates, or the withholding of remuneration of magistrates are matters which will eventually end up on your table and as part of your agenda for a recommendation to Parliament. And therefore, it has been practiced that to prevent any conflict of interest, the members of Parliament do not participate in any decisions or recommendations regarding misconduct matters involving magistrates. This is a very, very busy committee. The committee meets on a monthly basis, and the reason for that is to ensure that we can deal with complaints as soon as possible and as expeditiously as possible, because unfortunately the system or the regulations regulating the procedure provides for various processes to be followed which can be time consuming, and for that reason the Ethics Committee meets on a monthly basis. It is supported by a component comprising of magistrates. Mr. Mayor is one of those magistrates. The reason why this component has been established to assist the Commission is because the general principle is that judicial officers should be investigated by judicial officers, like in the case of judges. And therefore we have a component of magistrates who assist the Commission with investigation of complaints as an independent component, and also to lead evidence at misconduct hearings which are presided over by a judicial officer, which normally comes from a district or a province far away from where the magistrate is permanently rendering service, to ensure objectivity and to prevent any sense of the presiding officer not being independent or objective. Many complaints are received. Now, emanating from these recommendations And depending on the seriousness of complaints, if it is recommended that the magistrate must be provisionally suspended or suspended, or that the magistrate's remuneration must be withheld until the completion of a misconduct inquiry, or lastly, where it has been recommended by the presiding officer after a fully fledged misconduct hearing that a magistrate must be removed from office, and if that recommendation is supported by the magistrate's commission, and such recommendation is made to the Minister of Justice and Correctional Services, and if supported by the Minister of Justice and Correctional Services, that recommendation will end up on your table. And your committee, as one of its important functions, will then have to consider those recommendations by the Magistrates Commission, and you will make your recommendation in that regard. Why is this the case? Because magistrates are not public servants. Magistrates cannot be removed from office by the Minister of Justice or by the Director General of Justice, as was the case prior to 1994, when they were fully fledged public servants. Magistrates enjoy security of tenure, and they can only be removed from office by an Act of Parliament. And that is why your committee has inter alia been tasked with this function to make a final or take a final decision regarding any recommendations in respect of those matters which I have explained to you. Mr. Mayor, you will see him from time to time, himself and his colleagues, they will come here, and when these issues are on your agenda, they will come and they will brief you regarding the detail and the background and why the commission was moved to make a specific decision. He will deal with the more detail as soon as I have finished regarding that specific issue. The third and honorable chairperson, a very important issue to magistrates is remuneration, salaries. Magistrates, obviously, like I assume all of us, would like to get the highest possible salary to be paid to them at any given time. Now, the salary issue works like this. In terms of the Magistrates Act, the remuneration of magistrates is determined by the President of the Republic of South Africa, having considered, or after having considered, a recommendation by the IRC, the Independent Remuneration Committee. And the Independent Remuneration Committee, the IRC, consults as far as the proposals in respect of the remuneration of judges and magistrates are concerned with the Chief Justice. The Chief Justice, in turn, has requested the chairperson of the Magistrates Commission to establish a remuneration committee for the lower courts. And that committee, via the Magistrates Commission, submits on an annual basis recommendations regarding the remuneration of magistrates to the Chief Justice, who then estimates the recommendations with the IRC. And the IRC then, after it has collated and consulted with all role players, will finally submit its recommendation in respect of the remuneration of inter alia judges and magistrates to the President. And the President, as part of the current legislation, will submit those recommendations inter alia, Honorable Chairperson, to your committee for a recommendation. This happens on an annual basis. And it's a very important function, and you will normally read about that and the recommendations in the newspapers on an annual basis, because it's such a sensitive issue. Honorable Chairperson, those are the most important functions that I thought I should highlight to you. I therefore feel that it's more important for you to be present on the processes regarding misconduct of magistrates, because that is what you are going to deal with on a regular basis, as opposed to the remuneration issue, which will only cover your or appear in your agenda once per year. And with your permission then, Chairperson, I would like to ask my colleague to give you a brief overview of the processes as far as it involves your committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Like Mr. Schumann said, I'm Hans Meyer. I was actually the former Secretary of the Magistrates Commission from 1996 to 1997 when Mr. Schumann took over, and I was requested to deal with misconduct matters and complaints against magistrates only since 2000. So I dealt with all complaints against magistrates since 2000, and we're still dealing with it. Fortunately, we extended our supporting service to the Ethics Committee. There's four now. We have four magistrates dealing with all the complaints and investigations, and hopefully in due course we will introduce the other members as well. Chairperson, there's actually three matters which I would like to highlight, and this is where the committee comes in, or the Parliament comes involved, and that's Section 13 of the Act. You know, Mr. Schumann referred to in one of the objects of the Commission is in terms of Section 4F, to carry out investigations and make recommendations to the Minister regarding the matters mentioned in Section 13.3A. Now, Section 13.3A of the Magistrates Act deals with disciplinary processes. It's not a discharge of a magistrate, it's actually a removal from office. It's not like a dismissal in the public service, where you can only remove an office, a magistrate from office in terms of the Act. If the Commission deems it necessary and it is desirable for the Commission to provisionally suspend a magistrate pending an investigation into he or her citizen of office. For instance, we receive a complaint, and having afforded the particular magistrate an opportunity in terms of the early Alton Button rule to respond and show cause why he or she should not be provisionally suspended from office pending an investigation into that and a disciplinary inquiry into the allegations against that magistrate, then the Commission would recommend to the Minister to provisionally suspend that magistrate from office for the time being until the disciplinary process has been concluded. In terms of Section 13.3A, the Minister then, on the advice of the Commission, provisionally suspends from office. And then, if I can refer you to Section 13.3C, well, B first, then the Minister has to table a report in Parliament making known the reasons for the provisional suspension, and that must be tabled by the Minister within 7 days after he provisionally suspended the particular magistrate. And these time frames, sometimes it's very difficult to really act within the time limits provided by the Junior Act, but we are coping. All the years we've been coping, and we're really doing our level best to stay within the time limits. So the Minister then has to table a report in Parliament, which then has to refer to the committee, to this committee and to the Portfolio Committee. And then she says, Parliament must, as soon as it's reasonable possible, the previous Act wrote provided for 21 days, but I think that was too restricted. And it is for this committee to pass a resolution as to whether or not the provisional suspension of the magistrate is confirmed or not. So this is where we have to brief, as soon as the report has been tabled, we have one of those reports has already been tabled in Parliament, so as soon as it's been referred to this committee, normally the secretary will then just invite us and we brief you on the contents of that report, and then it's expected from this committee to either confirm or not confirm the provision suspension from office. That's now pending the disciplinary inquiry. With regard to the removal from office, as soon as the disciplinary process has been concluded and the deciding officer, who will always be a magistrate, recommends, you can only make a recommendation for removal from office, and that has been confirmed by the commission, then the magistrate commission makes a recommendation to the minister to have that particular magistrate removed from office. There's also a report in this regard tabled already in Parliament. In that regard, the minister must suspend that particular magistrate from office in terms of the Act. That's section 13.4. And it's not only with regard to misconduct, it's also, the commission can also make a recommendation that the magistrate be removed from office on account of continuous e-health or, for instance, an incapacity to carry out the functions of the office of the efficiency. So, Chairperson, we have a provisional suspension, and then we have a suspension. A suspension is actually the removal from office. If the minister, if the particular matter has been provisionally suspended and there is a recommendation for the removal from office on the ground of the three grounds which I mentioned just now, the minister must suspend, and then that report has to be tabled in Parliament if he suspends within 14 days. But he has no discretion. He must file that report and he must suspend. So from the moment that he suspends, the matter will be informed that he's been suspended from office, pending a decision by Parliament to have him either restored or not. That is section 13.4. And then we have also section 13.4, Big A, which deals with the remuneration of a magistrate. Now, normally if we, if the Commission recommends either a suspension or a provisional suspension or suspension, it is, if the Commission doesn't make any recommendation in terms of section 13.4 Big A, that remuneration will still be paid. But there may be instances where, and especially where a magistrate has been found guilty of an offence, and the disciplinary inquiry has also been concluded and he's been found guilty, then we would recommend that the withholding of the remuneration. And that is something totally different. It's a different process, but it also, it's on recommendation that the, of course, the particular magistrate will be provided the opportunity to respond and submit reasons why his remuneration should not be withheld. Having considered that, the commission then determines to withhold the remuneration, and that takes immediate effect. And a report has to be tabled in Parliament by the minister within 7 days from the decision taken by the commission. So that is very, we have a very, very, very short period in that, in this instance. And then, of course, Parliament must also, as soon as reasonable possible, consider the report and take a resolution as to whether or not to determine that the determination concerned to be confirmed, either with or without an amendment, or set aside. In terms of the Act, if magistrates are provisionally suspended and reports have been tabled in Parliament, the Commission is also obliged to provide you with progress reports on every 3 months on the disciplinary inquiry. That's in terms of section 13.3F. It must be concluded as soon as possible, of course, and the Commission must cause a report on the progress in respect of the inquiry to be submitted to Parliament every 3 months. Having been now a new committee,
we will submit these progress reports within the next few weeks. Chairperson, disciplinary inquiries against magistrates are sometimes very burdensome, and they can, the process must be fair, extremely fair, and of course substantial fair. We are in most of instances confronted with points in limine, litigation, etc., etc., so we have to deal with those as well. So we really, the presiding officer, like I said, is a magistrate, must be a magistrate, a judicial officer, and he or she will have to deal with all these arguments, make rulings. Sometimes these rulings are taken on appeal or review to the High Court. We have a matter which has been dealt with by the Supreme Court of Appeal, and the magistrate's application was dismissed. But nevertheless, the processes can be very long, but it must be fair. And we really try to endeavor to have these disciplinary inquiries dealt with and concluded as soon as possible, taking into account all these applications, of course. Thank you.
Thank you very much. If I can understand your presentation, there are two letters here to the minister. I think they are here for an example, because they are still going to the minister for recommendation. So I don't know whether the members can ask questions from those letters. To me, I think that's still premature to be discussed here, since you said in your presentation that they still need a recommendation from the minister. Can you comment on that?
Chairperson, are these the two reports which have been filed in the meantime? Now, you will, we will discuss this then, because I didn't bring those matters along. But we will you'll place it on the agenda, and then we will brief you fully on those two matters. But the minister has already suspended, provisionally suspended the one magistrate, and strengthened the other magistrate, and they've already been informed accordingly. So it just has to be confirmed now by Parliament. Either the provision suspension must be confirmed or not. That's in terms of section 13.3a of the Act, and the other one is section 13.4a of the Act, A1, on account of misconduct, we're asking for the removal from the magistrate, from office. So if I'm correct, then these reports will be finally tabled. It has been finally tabled. It will be referred to the committee. It has already been referred. So I will be invited by the secretary then to have you fully fledged briefed on these matters in due course.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, I think you can ask questions from the composition and functions of the Magistrate Commission, and also but not on these two letters. Over to you, members. Thank you very much. Questions, clarity, comments. Thank you. Honourable Chairperson Jose, thank you.
Chairperson, I just wanted to check on the Founding Act, Act No. 9 of 1993, as to whether to date the Commission not yet identified the clause that requires amendment of the Founding Act. Because in some instances, you may find that the legislators, together with the Commission, they are unable, you know, to deal with this matter as they would desire, on the basis of, you know, some weaknesses in terms of, you know, the law that mandate them to do that way. So I wanted to check as to from
committee or the commission is mainly dealing with issues of, particularly the ethics committee of discipline. And I just want to check, in terms of them being more proactive, what is the commission doing to ensure that they don't become more reactive to issues of discipline? Instead, they become more proactive and not act as firefighters. What are the mechanisms in place that you apply to ensure that you don't become reactive? Thank you.
Awesome. Okay, over to you, sir.
Thank you.
No other questions, please.
Honourable Chairperson, the first issue, the legislation since 1993, there have been a few minor amendments to the original Act since 1993, Section 12 and Section 13, which deals with the remuneration of magistrates have been amended, and a few other minor amendments. But there is now a major review of the legislation in the pipeline, legislation relating to the lower courts as a whole, the Magistrates Courts Act, as well as the Magistrates Act, as well as a review of the regulations for magistrates. A total review is currently in process, and the Department of Justice, in consultation with all role players, will embark on this process later this year.
Thank you, Chair. With regard to the second question, the Commission or the Ethics Committee will only charge with misconduct if the committee is of the view that the charges are so serious that if the particular man has been found guilty in a disciplinary hearing, he or she would be removed from office. There's an alternative in the regulations as well. The Ethics Committee is mandated also to and empowered to give counseling, to refer to sensitization, to give guidelines, to give guidance, to request for training. So we also conduct judicial quality assurance assessments throughout the year on all HR and on all the offices in a proactive manner as a training guide and as a training tool to also empower managers to perform their judicial functions properly. I don't know whether that will suitably respond to your question.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? If not, thank you very much. We appreciate your time. And we feel honored to have your briefing and your introduction to us. We hope that we work very smooth together. We'll take some possible format. Let's work together. Thank you very much. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you, honorable members. Let's welcome the Independent Police Investigative Directorate. Mr. McBride and the team, you are welcome by this committee, Select Committee on Security and Justice. It is nice to be here with you, wishing that we are going to work, we are trying to know each other as we are starting the fifth Democratic Parliament. We feel that let's start together and work together towards the end of the 5-year term and deliver what is necessary to our people. Happy to see you. I think you are the leader of the delegation. We expect your introduction and introduce your big guns around you. You can see there are a lot of big guns. And thank you, Mr. McBride. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Shepherds. Thanks for having us. I'd like to introduce my program managers. Firstly, Mr. Sissoko, who's a program manager for investigations and information manager, and program manager for corporate services, Mrs. Nishianda, the CFO, Ms. Linda Burti-Ngongo, and the acting program manager for compliance monitoring and stakeholder management, Marianne Pierce. And right at the end, Mr. Moses Lamini, who is director for communications. Next to him is our parliamentary liaison officer, Mrs. Lobe. And next to me is director for executive support, Andre Dumbacho.
Thank you. It's Linda Bushen, also. This one. Oh, okay. Okay, sir. Thank you, Helen. I think we need to introduce both. But if you are making an investigation, you know who is in the zoo. My name is Dumisani Klimbi. I'm representing the Western Cape member of this committee. Thank you. I'll ask the honorable members to introduce to the committee. Thank you.
Good morning and thank you, Chair. My name is Lewin Zimande from the capital of KwaZulu-Natal, Pietermaritzburg, and I'm a member representing the that province in the Select Committee. All right, thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Sir President. My name is Jihad Mohapi, a member of the Select Committee on Justice and Security. I'm also the chairperson of the Select Committee on Corporate Governance and Traditional Affairs.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Charles Julius, Gauteng Province.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is George Michalakis. I represent the Free State.
Good
morning, Chair. Good morning, everyone. My name is Morgan, representing KZN.
Dumela. Ke Teboho Mokoele. Ke tswa Bokone Bophirima. Ke represent Economic Freedom Fighters. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning. My name is Titus Mtanga, representing the Mpumalanga province, a member of the Select Committee.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Gershon Dixon. I'm the Secretary for the Committee.
Thank you, Chair. And Anthea van der Berg, our Content Advisor to the Committee.
Thank you very much, members, and the team from Independent Police Investigating Directorate. Mamuana, congratulations. Thank you. I know you are not late. Okay. Honourable members, the Southwestern Time will ask the delegation to brief the committee on their strategic plan and annual performance plan. Thank you. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Thank you, Honourable members. Honourable Chairperson, if before we go into the presentation, if I can just give an overview and the background to IPED. As we go into, as IPED into our third financial year, we're in the process of transforming from the ICD to the IPID. There's a move away from complaints-oriented directorate to investigative-oriented directorate. At the inception of the ICD in 1997, the Department of Public Service and Administration approved 535 posts for the ICD to enable it to fulfill its then mandate of a complaints directorate. Now as we enter our third financial year with a new mandate, with a more expanded mandate in terms of extent and depth, we only have 393 members. So at the moment we haven't even reached the old mandate full complement status. In regards to that, it can be imagined that we have a serious capacity problem, and we are in the process of dealing with that. We've developed an expansion strategy which has now been costed, and it is now a expansion plan, and we've begun to engage with Treasury, and a number of bilaterals are expected to be held in the next few months with a view to ensuring that we're properly financed and able to implement the strategic expansion plan. So we would require support from the Honourable Committee in our deliberations with the various stakeholders to ensure that we have sufficient resources to fulfil our mandate. With regards to the preparation of our budget, our strategic plan, our APP, we've taken into account all previous engagements with Parliament. We've taken into account the Auditor General's reports, instructions from FOSSA, the National Development Plan, the medium-term strategic framework, and other legislative imperatives. IPED has also gone through various internal deliberations and has developed a number of documents including our strategic expansion plan. During the strategic period from 2014 to 2019, the directorate will be focused on dealing with the capacity shortages. So this process will include alignment of the directorate's functions and priorities, aligned with the Constitution and all relevant legislation, including the new IPED Act, which needs to be fully implemented. If I can just pause there to say that in drafting of the legislation of the translation from ICD to IPED, not all aspects could have been envisaged what was required to have an effective investigative directorate. And so certain cogs in the machine are not in place yet. So we'd have to, in the next this 5 years, the five financial years, we'd have to ensure full compliance with the Act. We've been able to move posts and funds around for this present financial year to be able to comply to some extent with the demands of the Act and the demands of our mandate. We've also gone through a process of aligning the various components of the directorate's planning, budgeting and reporting process, and we take into account all the parliamentary inputs that have been made over time. To deal with the capacity shortages, we've established over the last 3 years satellite offices. However, the satellite offices infer temporary interim measures and not a lasting solution. As such, we've come up with the expansion policy which will look at regional and district offices. For example, Honourable Chairperson, in your province in Western Cape, is one of the most overburdened provinces in terms of capacity shortages. Part of our plans in our costing is to establish a district office in Vredendal. At the moment we have two offices, one in Belleville and one in George, and it is completely insufficient. The long distances that we have to travel, the constraining transport policies, it's really difficult. For example, in terms of all relevant transport policies, on subsidized vehicles, you have 2,500 kilometers allowance for a month. Half of that gets taken up by a trip to Vredendal and back. So that's the kind of limitations we have. Of course, in terms of corporate governance, we hope to obtain at the end of this financial year, as we have done in previous financial years, an unqualified audit again. So in spite of the limited resources, we are able to still maintain good governance of our department. And again, I just pause to mention that whilst we're a small department, we are expected to report in terms of compliance and performance to the same extent as any other department, even hundreds of times the size of us. A number of environmental factors determine how we implement our strategic objectives. The one I've already touched on is a capacity issue and inadequate coverage of IPED across the country so that our people can have access to IPED and IPED can exercise its oversight mandate and adequately deal with the very often complex investigations. We have increased workload as a result of the expanded mandate. The country has been experiencing a number of violent protests over the last few years, which results in necessary police interventions, which obviously then impacts on the workload on us. There is also a challenge where some people misunderstand the mandate of IPED, and very often we have to then refer them to a civilian secretariat or to another agency to deal with matters that don't fall within our mandate. With the establishment of the department, there were initially some asymmetrical or skewed structural realities, with the result that some of our staff at certain levels are lower than their counterparts in other departments. As a result, there's a high staff turnover, people leaving for more lucrative departments, even though we've trained them and we've invested in the human resource development of them. We have challenges internally where we have this, because of the old mandate and the translation being a work in progress, there's sometimes lack of uniformity in applying investigative procedures. And in terms of a mandate, we have to maintain our independence and integrity of all investigations. Because of capacity problems and the fact that we had to, as we put it, change the wheel while the car is moving, we, for example, don't comply with Occupational Health and Safety Act because we haven't appointed anybody because there haven't been funds there. So those are similarly physical security. Even though we deal with some of the most complex and dangerous investigations, we've only been able to establish now in the last 2 weeks with the new administration a small, minute protective unit to give us capacity in to have some measure of defense. Because of the inadequate premises that we have, and that the litigation surrounding the premises we are in at national office, it might put some challenges on our ability to recover from any catastrophic event or business and to ensure business continuity. Honorable Chairperson, I'm now going to hand over to the Chief Financial Officer to provide her inputs, Ms. Linda Gorte Ngongo.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll be presenting to you today the estimates of national expenditure for Vote 23, which is the votes afforded for the Independent Police Investigative Directorate for the 2014-15 financial year. But before I take you through the budget, just to put it in context, the purpose of the ENE is to set out the planned expenditure as well as performance at the time of taking the budget. For in respect of the budget of the IPID, this budget has been aligned to the National Development Plan as well as the medium-term strategic framework, and outlines IPA's contribution towards government's outcomes, particularly outcome 3, that all people in South Africa are safe and feel safe, as well as outcome 12, an efficient, effective, and development-oriented public service, particularly with issues of service delivery, quality and access, business process systems, decisions, rights and accountability, and the tackling of corruption effectively. In terms of the National Development Plan, the plan highlights the need to ensure that all people in South Africa live safely in a corrupt-free society with an independent and fair criminal justice system. The plan also states inspiring public confidence in the criminal justice system is the most effective deterrent to criminality. And as such, the IPED's work is aligned with the plan through its focus on ensuring that the police service is trusted by the community, thus contributing towards a capable state. The IPED also plays an essential role in promoting a transparent and accountable police service in South Africa by investigating criminal offences allegedly committed by members of the South African Police Service and municipal police services as outlined in Section 28 of the Independent Police Investigative Directorate Act. The estimates of national expenditure for IPID also highlights the performance, personnel and finances for each program of the IPRD in respect of the impact that each program has on the plans of the Directorate. The budget of the IPRD is also aligned to other approved budget program structure, which was approved by National Treasury, which consists of four budget programs. If we reflect back on the historical allocations of the IPRD since 2010, you can see that there was a 19.5% growth between the years 2010 to 2010-11 to 2011-12. There was a growth of 28.9% between 2011-12 and 2012-13, which 2012-13 was the first year of the implementation of the IPED Act. And then between 2012-13 and 2013-14, there was a growth rate of 9.65%, which over these 4 years, the IPED saw an average growth rate of 19.1%. In terms of the current allocations that have been allocated for the NTF period 2014-15 to 2016-17, the budget of the IPED will grow from 134.7 million to 262.3 million in 2016-17, which is an average growth rate of 6.5%. In terms of the overarching goal of the IPID, this goal is to contribute towards ensuring a police service that is trusted by the community and operates in line with the spirit of the Constitution. And as indicated previously, the IPED does this by contributing both towards outcome 3 as outlined in the National Development Plan to ensure that the IPED assists as an effective deterrent against crime. In terms of spending focus for the upcoming MTF period, the spending focus is to achieve the performance targets. The Directorate has aligned its budget with its plans to increase the number of investigators over the medium term. The spending focus over the medium term will continue to be on enhancing the Directorate's investigative capacity to conduct successful and high-quality investigations within the targeted period. The Directorate plans to appoint an additional 44 personnel over the medium term, mainly investigators, thus increasing the approved establishment from 349 posts to 393 posts in 2016-17. This is exclusive of the expansion strategy which the department is setting forward at all the relevant platforms to bring the organization to a state of full capacity. In terms of skill development, there will be increased focus on improving the skills of investigators to enable them to execute the extended mandate in terms of Section 28 of the IPED Act. The budget allocations have increased from 128.4 million in 2010-11 to 217 million, which was an average growth of 19.1% due to the allocation that was given to the department in order to assist it with implementing the first year of the IPED Act. But over the medium term, currently, with the current allocations that have been appropriated to us, the average growth rate will only, this currently sits at 6.5%. In terms of budget allocation per program, the spending focus over the medium term will continue to be enhancing the Director of Investigative capacity, and as such, the bulk of the spending over the medium term will be in Program 2, Investigation and Information Management, in order to assist towards this objective. In terms of allocations per program, Program 2 received the highest allocation of 64% of the budget for 2014-15, followed by Program 1, our administration program, at 31%, with 3% and 2% awarded to our other programs. In terms of economic classification, majority of the split is allocated towards compensation of employees, followed by goods and services, which sits at 34.8 million for our core program investigation and information management. If we look further into the budget allocated to Program 1, which is administration, the purpose of this program is to provide the overall management of the IPID and support services, including strategic support to the Directorate. The spending focus in this program over the medium term will be on capacitating the Directorate's administrative support services and enhancing its internal control environment to ensure good governance and that the Directorate delivers on its mandate,
Accordingly, the bulk of the expenditure over the medium term will go to internal control and the strengthening of security, as well as the implementation and maintenance of the Directorate's ICT systems. If we move to Program 2, Program 2 is our core program, which coordinates and facilitates the Independent Police Investigative Directorate's processes and develops policy and strategic frameworks that guide and report on investigations. This is also the program that houses our regional offices within the various provinces. The spending focus for Program 2 over the medium term will be on investigating matters as outlined in Section 28 of the IPED Act in order to contribute towards making sure that people in South Africa are and feel safe. Accordingly, 92.5% of the budget over the medium term is allocated to the Investigation Services staff program, which houses the provincial regions in which we operate. Program 3, which is Legal Services, manages and facilitates the provision of investigation advisory services and provides legal and litigation advisory services. In terms of its spending focus over the medium term, the spending focus will be on the provision of sound legal advice and guidance to ensure that cases forwarded for prosecution comply with legal requirements. There's a significant anticipated growth in its sub-program investigation advisory services, and this is to meet the expected increase in demand for investigation advisory services due to the projected increase in the number of investigations conducted by the Investigation and Information Management Program over the medium term. Program 4, Compliance Monitoring and Stakeholder Management. The purpose of this program is to safeguard the principles of cooperative governance and stakeholder management. And as such, the spending focus over the medium term will be on safeguarding the principles of cooperative governance, which include monitoring the director's compliance with reporting obligations, as well as the quality of recommendations referred to the police service and the National Prosecuting Authority. It will also be involved in stakeholder management and ensuring public awareness of the director's mandates and functions through community awareness programs. In terms of mandates which the Directorate currently hopes to pursue, which are currently not funded in the intake allocations that are presented, include units such as the Integrity Management Unit, as outlined in Section 223 of the IPED Act, Investigation Information Processing Unit, as outlined in Section 9B of the IPED Act, and National Specialized Investigation Team at full capacity. We have been able to establish a small team within the current baseline, but we wish to expand this team to full capacity. Specialized training for investigators, we also wish to further pursue this area, as well as systemic corruption investigations, specialized investigative and pure equipment, as well as the expansion strategy which the Executive Director has highlighted to earlier. This then brings me to the end of the presentation of Vote 23 of the Estimates of National Expenditure. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable Chairperson, with your permission, can we ask Mrs. Nomkosi Netsianda to deal with Program 1, she's Chief Director of Corporate Services. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Honourable Members. I'm presenting annual performance plan for Program 1. The purpose of Program 1 is to provide overall management of the Independent Police Investigative Directorate and support services, including strategic support to the Directorate. The program consists of the following sub-programs. Departmental Management. Under Departmental Management, we've got executive support, which is supporting the Office of the Executive Director. We've got corporate governance, that is looking at the ethics at risk and as well as corporate monitoring and evaluation of our performance at the department. We've got corporate services. Under corporate services, we've got human resource management and development services. We've got security management. We've got information communication technology. We've got communication and marketing services. auxiliary services, finance services, internal audit, as well as office accommodation. I will take you through the plans for the MTEF period for Program 1. We want to continue with public awareness campaigns. We've got an output of public awareness campaign. We plan to issue formal media statements, 40 media statements each financial year across MTEF period. We will also respond to media inquiries. We will respond on 2014-15. 120 responses will be issued. 2015-16, 150. 2016-17, 180 media responses. Output of performance management system. An indicator is number of performance monitoring and evaluation reports submitted to ensure attainment of strategic objectives. In 2014-15, throughout MTEF period, we will issue certain reports. Number of financial and strategic reports submitted. In 2014-15, we will issue 22 reports throughout MTEF period, the same number will be issued. On the output capacity building human resource management plan, we've got four indicators. First indicator is percentage vacancy rate per year. We want to ensure that the vacancy rate is below 10% throughout MTEF period. We also want to ensure that we recruit and retain female at senior management level. We want to have 50% representativity throughout MTEF period. Also, people with disability, we want to ensure that our staff complement, we've got 2% of people living with disabilities throughout MTEF period. We also want to approve the retention policy during the current MTEF during the current financial year. Output of ICT plan and governance framework. We've got two indicators. We want to develop ICT plan. During 2014-15, we will do land refresh and upgrade at national office. 2015-16, we will roll out the ICT continuity plan. 2016-17, we will roll out the electronic document management system. The second indicator, we want to produce on quarterly basis ICT governance report, one per quarter, four per annum throughout MTEF period. Output realignment of organizational functions and structures. On annual basis, we want to review our structure to check if it still addresses the needs of the organization and also it is also assisting us to implement fully the IPID Act. On annual basis, we will review the structure once a year. Number of environmental assessment studies conducted a year. We will do an environmental study, one per province and one at national office, that makes 10 per annum and throughout MTEF period, that will be the case. Thank you so much, Chairperson.
Chairperson, with your permission, can I ask Mr. Matthew Sissoko to deal with both Program 2 and Program 3, where he is the Program Manager for Program 2 and the Acting Program Manager for Program 3. Thank you, sir.
Good morning. morning, Chairperson, honorable members. It is my honor to appear before you. I'm going to take you through the presentation on Program 2, Investigation and Information Management, as well as Program 3, Legal Services. With regard to Program 2, the purpose of the program is to strengthen oversight role over the police by conducting investigation within the powers granted to the Directorate by the IPIE Act. It also makes recommendation on investigation conducted and ensure efficiency in registration and investigation of cases. This program has three sub-programs. The sub-programs consist of investigation management, and this sub-program develops and maintains investigation systems, procedures, norms, standards, and policies in line with the IPID Act, number 1 of 2011. The second sub-program is information management, and this component manages information and knowledge management services through the development and maintenance of case flow management system, a database and the analysis and the compilation of statistical information. It also conducts trend analysis based on available data and make recommendations to the CPS. And the third sub-program is investigation services. The sub-program manages and conducts investigations in line with the IPID Act. The sub-program is where our provinces sit, where operations happen. With regards to the strategic output and objectives for the department for this program, the strategic objectives there is the IPID processes cases efficiently. And the outputs there are case management system, a system for the registration, allocation, and tracking management and reporting of investigation, generation of reliable statistical information, and provision of general business intelligence. Completed investigation of cases in line with the provisions of the IPID Act, regulations, and the Executive Director's guidelines. Recommendation reports to the SAPS regarding possible disciplinary steps and to the prosecuting authority regarding possible criminal prosecution. These outputs have the following indicators. The case management system. The first indicator there is percentage of cases registered and allocated within 72 hours of receipt. Our target there is 98% of cases received, and in the 2014-15 financial year, 99% in the 2015-16, and 100% in the 2016-17, respectively. Number of statistical reports generated on the number and type of cases investigated, recommendations made, and outcomes thereof. The target there is 18 reports over the NTF period. With regard to completed investigations in line with the IPID Act, the indicators there is percentage of investigations of death in police custody completed within 90 days. Our plans is to, the target is 65% of cases completed within 90 days. In 2014-15 financial year, 66%, 2015-16, 67%, 2016-17. Percentage of investigations of death as a result of police action completed within 90 days. It's 65%, 66%, 67% respectively over the NTF period. Investigations of discharge of an official firearm by a police officer completed within 90 days. The target there is also 55, 56, 57% respectively over the NTF period. Percentage of rape by a police officer completed within 90 days. The target there is also, it's 60, 61, 62% over the NTF period, respectively. Percentage of investigation of rape while in police custody completed within 90 days. The target is there. It's 60%, 61%, 62% respectively over the entire period. Percentage of investigations of torture completed within 90 days. The target there over the medium term, it's 50, 51, 52% respectively. Percentage of investigations of assault completed within 90 days. The target there is 50, 51, and 52% respectively over the medium term period. Percentage of investigation of corruption completed within 90 days. The target there is 55%, 56%, 57% respectively over the entire period. Percentage of investigations of other criminal matters, misconduct, referred to the directorate in terms of section 28.1H and 35.1B of the IPID Act completed within 90 days. The target there is also 55, 56, 57% respectively over the entire period. Number of cases of systemic corruption identified for possible investigation approved within a financial year. The target there is 18 systemic corruption cases identified over the entire period. Percentage of approved systemic corruption investigations, the target there, completed within the 12-month period, the target there is 20% over the MTF period, which is about 4 cases out of the 18 that shall have been identified. Percentage by which backlog investigations are reduced annually, excluding systemic corruption, the target there is 50% reduction of backlog cases over the entire period. With regards to output on recommendation reports, the indicator there is additional recommendation reports referred to SAPS within 30 days of completion of the relevant investigation. Our target there is 80% on the 14-15 financial year and then 100% 15-16 and 16-17. Criminal recommendation reports refer to the NPA within 30 days of completion of the relevant investigation. It's 100% over the NPF period. Chairperson, I need to indicate that as the executive director has indicated, the expansion strategy that he referred to mainly talks to accessibility of the IPID throughout all the provinces. This will then enable the IPID to be able to respond promptly to crime scenes, thereby ensuring that our investigations are not compromised but are also seen to be independent. Therefore, the support of this committee in the strategy will be greatly appreciated, as this will help us in ensuring that the provinces are adequately served. Chairperson, having said that, I'll move then to Program 3, Legal Services. The purpose of this program manages and facilitates the provision of investigation advisory services and provides litigation advisory services. The program also consists of three sub-programs, which is legal support and administration. This sub-program manages the legal obligations of the directorate. It develops and maintains systems and procedures, norms and standards to support and guide and direct legal support within the directorate. Litigation advisory services. This sub-program is responsible for coordination of civil and labor litigation, as well as coordination of granting of policing powers. The sub-program, other key activities and outputs include finalization of received contract and service level agreements. Investigation Advisory Services. This sub-program provides support during and after investigation. It provides legal advice and guidance to investigators and ensures that all cases that are provided for prosecution comply with the requirement of prosecution process. When you look at the output in this program, management of the directorate's legal obligation, negotiations of contracts, memorandum of understanding and service level agreements, legal advice and guidance to investigators during and after completion of investigation and granting of policing powers, civil and labor litigations for and against the department. The indicators that we have for the management of directorate's legal obligation, negotiation of contracts, memorandum of understanding and service level agreements are three. These indicators are percentage of contracts and service level agreements finalized within 30 working days of request. The target there is 90% of contracts and SLAs finalized within 90 days throughout the entire period. Percentage of legal opinions provided to the directorate within 21 days of receipt. The target there is 90 days of these legal opinions provided within 21 days over the entire period. Percentage of policies reviewed for legal compliance within 21 working days of request. The target there is also 90% of policies reviewed within 21 days over the entire period. On the output, legal service and guidance to investigators during and after completion, we've got five indicators there. Number of practice notes and directives, bulletin produced and issued. The target there is four of these bulletins over the MTF period. Percentage of legal advice provided to investigators within 24 hours. The target there is 90 days of legal service provided within the set time frame over the MTF period. Percentage of legal written advice provided within 48 hours of request. The target there is also 90% of legal advice provided over the MTF period. Percentage of applications for policing powers processed within 5 working days of request. The target there is 100% of the application processed over the MTF period. And percentage of promotion of access to Information Act request processed within 30 days of request. The target there is also 100% of the applications within over the entire period. With regard to civil and labor litigations for and against the department, we have two indicators. The indicators are percentage of legal and civil litigations attended to. The target is 90% of the matters over the MTF period, and percentage of legal and labor litigations attended to. The target there is 100% of the matters attended to over the MTF period. I thank you, Chairperson and members.
Honorable Chairperson, if I can ask Acting Program Manager for Program 4, Ms. Marianne Kiertz, to give her input on Program 4. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. With regard to Program 4, the purpose of the program is then to safeguard the principles of cooperative governance and stakeholder management. This is then done through the ongoing monitoring and evaluation of the quality of the recommendations then made to the SAPS and the Municipal Police Service, and then also the reporting of the police service's compliance with their reporting obligations in terms of the IPES Act. Now, in order to accomplish that, we have been two sub-programs. The first one is compliance monitoring. This sub-program then monitors and evaluates the quality of the recommendations and the responsiveness that we then receive from SAPS, the NPS, as well as the NPA then on these recommendations that were forwarded to them, and that everything also then monitored in terms of the compliance of their reporting obligations. The next one is then the stakeholder management sub-program. They then manage the relations and liaison with the director's key stakeholders like the SAPF, the NPS, the Civilian Secretariat, the NPA, the Special Investigative Unit, Public Protector, State Security Agency, and then other civil society organizations. And then that is also then in line with the requirements of the IPED Act. It also then coordinates and liaises with the parliamentary committees and the other stakeholders. It is then also established in coordination, then coordinate the activities in terms of the consultative forum as per Section 15 of the IPED Act. It's also then responsible to create enabling mechanisms for community participation in the achievement of our IPED objectives. Our outputs then specifically that we measure is in the monitoring of our of the quality of our recommendation reports to the SAPF, that is then to ensure impact-driven measurements there. With regard to our monitoring and responsiveness, that is what we monitor to make sure that we do get feedback from the SAPF, the NPS, and the NPA to make sure that our cases are actually then finalized and concluded. We also then organize campaigns to increase in public awareness, to ensure that people are aware of our act and our functions, and to make sure that people understand them. In terms of our regular engagements with other key stakeholders, we then also reports, and that is then seen on the next slide in terms of our ABP outputs. Where we then produce a report in terms where we evaluate our own reports and recommendations that we then produce on a quarterly basis, and that will be then over our MTF period, four reports for the every year. We also then produce a second report in terms of the number of or the manner in the, of the implementation of these recommendations that we made to the NPF, NPA, as well as CHUPS. The third one is in a number of reports on the evaluation of their compliance in terms of reporting obligations. The same there applies then as well, a quarterly report is being produced. Those are all in line with our Act in terms of Chapter 7, Section 30, Section 29, and so forth. In terms of the next slide, we will see stakeholder management's output indicators there. The number of community outreach events conducted is 306. It basically works out for each province, it's about almost one a week if you do the calculation. Participation then in community policing forums. It's in including national office, one meeting a month. For the number of the formal engagements at national office, it's monthly, and the same on provincial level, also monthly meetings for all 9 provinces. Thank you.
Honourable Chairperson, in conclusion and in summary, I wish to say that the Independent Police Investigative Directorate complement at present is inadequate for the Directorate of Police mandate, and our expansion strategy and plan requires the support of the Select Committee. We also need support in terms of resources for intensifying the training of investigators, both in terms of the number of investigators and the specialization of investigators for more complex investigations. And we just want to say from myself and my management team that we are committed to deliver on our mandate as per the Constitution, as per the IPED Act, all other relevant legislation, and programs and plans of government. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, sir. Members, you can, this is your time to comment
clarity, questions over to your members. Thank you. Honorable, if member.
Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity. Firstly, let me welcome the report from the Executive Director. I have a few questions, and also because of the, let me also make an observation and also congratulate the Director for achieving that, because I can see that he's delegating and also exposing other senior managers also to be able to participate in this discussion. And also I noticed that even though he says there's some of the shortfall, he has addressed the issue of the gender, because there are senior managers who are women. So he understands our goal and of this government. The issue of the, because we have also presented in this, highlighted the challenges of the staff retention. Just want to find out the reasons you have to manage to make analysis of the staff retention, the turnover. What are the reasons of the challenge? And then what are you going to do if you have come up with the analysis and the report to ensure that to address the issue of the staff retention and be able to have the staff retention? The issue of the provincial managers, because of in the legal service, especially to that one, the time frame to be able to achieve those. First, when we have the challenge of the satellite offices that need to be set in the different provinces, and also we have the time frame for the ensuring that immediately when you address the issue of the satellite office, also addressing the issue of the provincial manager in that regard, because there are areas that you have provincial offices, but also you don't have provincial managers. The other one of the public participation. There were two presentations that have been program one and program two. I'm going to combine it because the other one is causing program, I think program one and program two, which is just the issue of public participation. The statement that was said there, 50% of the media statement will be issued.
Right.
That's the package of 2014, 2015. And then also the under issue of, under, I'm not sure which program it is, public participation of awareness. Just want to check that the effectiveness of those campaigns. Because of the target of having these statements that will be to be issued, I want to take it as an issue of public participation as well, even though it has been presented in a different program. But they do have a relationship between the one of the other program of having the effectiveness of issuing of having target of 50% and having one statement being issued and one campaign and consultability tema. How are you able to have an impact of that? So, and the measures that have been put to ensure that the issue of the effectiveness and of awareness campaign, in particular to rural areas, because of the issue of the media statement, how is it spread? Is it all throughout the country, even the rural areas, and even the rural is the issue of the challenge of the news people and the media? Under consultative forum, there's an establishment of the consultative forum, and also the establishment of consultative forum to conduct public participation. What is the difference between the two of those two committees?
and what you seek to achieve by having two different committees that you want to be there to ensure that and then able to what is going on. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Kosi unzetse mafoko, but I appreciate the report brought forward to us and highlight some concerns in terms of issues raised by the executive officer, director. Okay. I'm concerned about the unfunded mandate, especially the one of investigation information processing unit. If that is unfunded, I wonder if your department will be able to perform its objective correctly. Secondly, the issue of public participation. In your environmental sectors, you indicate inadequate coverage of your department, yet your strategic output, you don't talk too much of how do you want your department to be there, out there, and to be assisted in terms of public participation. I myself, I will say your report needs to be clear as to here are your challenges and what is it that you want us to assist moving forward. And the challenges, lack of uniformity in applying investigative procedures. I need clarity to that, to say, are you saying your investigators are having, you get my point, and the IPD does not comply with the Occupational Health and Safety Act? Sure, I'm afraid acting director, it's your responsibility to make sure that this is adhered to. So, Chief Director, thank you very much, but please make sure, I don't know whether we are the relevant structure to say to you, we acknowledge your report, but with questions to say, then how are you going to perform moving forward in this financial year? But that's my take, Chairperson.
Okay, Honourable Wanda.
Me say thank you for this report. So informative. Thank you very much. I don't have many clarities, but what I didn't hear is in the report, slide number 33, capacity building human resource. But before I get there, there's this issue of media, 120 media responses. Sure. You can keep the sound. Education. Is this a count that is taking place in South Africa to the individual and to the collective? Whether the incident is that will reflect in the media for a month? Is creating a division between the profession and the masses? Because if the media coverage in the workplace, we used to say media doesn't belong to us. What is the image?
about the issue of human resources. There's no coverage to cover the workforce of the institution. For instance, maybe somebody can do something out of a provocation, and there's no protection policy for the sake of controlling the intelligence of the masses. That's not the answer. Even I don't say to the person. It's very dangerous in my own analysis. Secondly, I want to appeal to the collective, it's too low the percentage of 2% to disabled people, because that's what is because here you can use the institution inside, even if they're not going out for issues that are difficult. I don't know if my way. There's an issue that I would like to have as a provision from the government. We must try as a leading political government to move away from the principles of the apartheid. Why am I making this comment? Let us show a professional trained asset of the country. Have whatever offense. It's a person. You can't take a person who used to be a warrant officer or whatever level for the offense and taking and locking in the criminal. Because that was the apartheid practices to reduce the dignity of that individual. Because categories of the people are different. I don't know how can you pursue that as a select committee. Because in other countries they don't do that. I wanted to highlight this issue of ICT in a better perspective. That's not under LNC of trying to scale otherwise or not the sovereignty of that particular country, that particular region. I don't know if you understand it. Put across. I don't know how can I put it, because in my understanding there are issues that I needed to be controlled and limited even to the neighboring suburbs. On the other hand, but we need to be very cautious. Let me blended with the issue that need to be discussed more, maybe not in this committee, broadly. There's that issue when the violence by what? Maybe the person was under pressure. There's no program where you say this collective at such and such a time, they go out for company. Because issues are different on the ground. So that you can have a very solid personnel for a long span of time. In issue of budget, just to lend, when you are targeting, I've said the first and budget. to target at some stage doesn't love manners quite specified, but the target doesn't change. I would like to be able to look at that. Thank you so much.
Yes. Honorable Mahat.
Thank you very much, Kasim. Allow me also to appreciate and acknowledge the presentation. Mine is a few questions, being one of them to open a meeting for the panel. The director, Honorable Chair, spoke more of a loss of key personnel. If we check in terms of their program A, it is very clear and imminent that this is a long-standing concern, hence the development of the transition policy. I'm not sure if it's available for the committee to have an opportunity just to discuss this. Two, the Auditor General also raised a concern around the issue of labor compliance, particularly in terms of the public service regulations. This is in regard to the unavailability of the human resource plan. So I'm not sure if there's any elaboration around the planning. The other concern is around the financial and management responsibility, which was centralized national, and it handicapped the provinces in terms of their spending pattern. I just want to check, how far are you in terms of ensuring that you start decentralizing the responsibility so that we already subscribe to the notion that South Africa is the unitary state? And also assist in terms of effective performance. So, lastly, it's from the budget side, maybe long concern, if I may call out an input. If you check in terms of your payment of capital assets, to me, honestly speaking, there's a serious concern of a fiscal dumping. Because one's observation is that in terms of your expenditure, you performed quite so strange. If you check in your third quarter, there's been an underspending which is so significantly observed. But in your fourth quarter, there's overspending that is also more significantly observed. So I just want to get clarity. What should be the cause for this underspending and overspending on both the third quarter and the fourth quarter? So just allow me to come.
Yes, over to you, ma'am.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just thought you said over to you, ma'am. Okay, I think that's good. thank you, Jay. Just on the staff retention, I just want to know, where do we get most of our employees from? Where do we source it from? What sector of the public or the economy? Are we sourcing more from South African police services? I just think that one of my suggestions would be to look more at university courses specific to IPED and what your needs are, private colleges and so forth, so that the public can engage with it and maybe, yeah, because I just think that it's easier to retain a person with organizational specific skills. I just think it would be easier to get these people might be overskilled or skilled in various fields and then they opt to go to another place. I think I partly covered with one of my other issues. And then I just want to know, man, I'm a bit uncomfortable with the presentation of the budget. On what do you base your targets? Because this committee just assumed office and it's our first interaction. I would think that, you know, we would be taken through a past performance in all the budgetary sources there that we've seen. If it's 90%, we are coming from 20% to 90%. You know, just the past performance. I know we have the responsibility to go and read it up. It will be too much of a task to go and check everything the way you present it here and align it. It will take us forever, and you know this is a very busy period that we are in now. Because without this performance, I would think that, you know, anyone can think that you can't start these targets. I thus request that we have a report, maybe in future, just a report to say that this is so that we can, in our minds, you know, sort of get the necessary conviction that, you know, this is the right thing that we are actually doing. Because the 90%, 100% targets might sound ambitious if we do not have a background to base it on. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Umano Pele. And yeah, Mr. Sanga, not Honorable
Sanga. Thank you, sir. Mine is actually taken from where Honorable Mahathir has been with the issue of the much spike of spending and fiscal dumping towards the end of financial year. Because I've noticed that few of the programs towards the end of financial year there will be more spending. And also raises the issue that was presented by the executive director in his opening, posting the issue of the challenges of insufficient funds. Whereas they are underspending of payments and capital assets, and as well as underspending under information administration. So to me, it does not overwhelm with the truth. We raise the issue of insufficient funding, but they understand that it's so if in other areas it means to me that there might be misalignment of the budget. So this is what we can. However, I would like to also raise the issue that historically when I go through the institution is struggling with the alignment of the core mandate, and also the budget. But the campaign with what your presentation that they've been taking here with regards to aligning the specific objectives and the budget and the core mandate with it. That's what to say that we, even though we are highlighting the weakness, but we are also observing that the campaign and improvement with it. And of this, but that's the issue that we're raising, the understanding needs to be.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The last one.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Actually, yeah, let me also welcome the presentation as presented. I will just go directly to let me go to slides because they know what they presented. On the issue of security and protection, on the issue of security, protection unity. I just want to know how far have you, the department, what is the department's plan in regard to protection of our mayors at the lower level? As you, of course, has taken note that there are so much more riots or violence accidents that are taking place on the ground. Now, I wanted to know how, what is your plan in that regard in the protection of our mayors? Secondly, because we talk of protection, the protection of our MP members, it should also be taken to your note, your ordinary MP members. You'll find them going traveling from parliament to where they stay, almost, it will be almost 40 to 30 meters. We don't know what is the measures that have been put in place in terms of.
Point of order, honourable member. I think those questions, let's wait for the police for their presentation. Then I think that this is irrelevant to this committee, to this team. Thank you.
Okay, Chair, no, maybe I made a mistake, but I saw the indicated issues of protection units, which is in their presentation. That is why I'm referring to that. It's in their presentation, Chair. But yes, again, Chair, the issue of your crime prevention measures. Yes, we understand this is a new department, but the measures that were put before and that the policies that were proposed by Parliament to say this is what we must do in fighting crime or preventing crime. Now I understand, know that there is a national crime prevention strategy that is in place, that it should be used. Which that strategy itself, it gives us a direction how should we collaborate to each other as the safety department. And that includes your provincial crime prevention framework, which it entails your MEM and your CSF committees as mandated by our Congress. How far have we moved? What is the plan therefore you have in that regard? And you also spoke about the issue of your riots around municipalities. As the ruling party, of course, and we mandated that we should, of course, delegate investigation officers to the level of municipalities. What is the progress thereof? Thank you.
Thank you very much, members. Otherwise, I'm also covered by the members for the questions as I was thinking that I will ask. But I can just ask some few in the key risks or challenges. I would like to know why there is no non-compliance with the occupational health and safety, and what is being done to address the matter. And can you also specify the nature of the catastrophic events and what programs or measures are being undertaken to address this? Secondly, if we go to public awareness campaigns, what does the PID measure the effectiveness of the awareness campaigns, particularly in rural areas? Thirdly, in the case management system, what if its system has been implemented to ensure the effective management and control of cases? And can you also give us the statistics gathered and analyzed, and by who? Who is doing that analysis? And how is information gathered from satellite and provincial offices? And what systems have been implemented to ensure the efficiency and effectiveness of information gathering? And another question is that in the legal advice and guidance investigations, can you tell us what is being done to ensure that provincial managers are being appointed in all provinces
And what is the time frame for that? Do we have time frame for that? And what training and staff development has been put in place to achieve those targets? There are a lot of questions that all members have covered, but in the monitoring, how is the quality of recommendation monitored? And what framework is utilized to ensure that reporting recommendations of a higher quality? If you can explain. And how is the implementation and follow-up of recommendation monitored and managed? Thank you. Jose Torizan, I'd want to Jose Torizan, I'll give the members 5 minutes break and come and we'll listen to you. Thank you. I want to give 5 minutes and then, because 1 o'clock there's another meeting. Thank you.
Members, I think 5 minutes is over. 5 minutes over. Members and delegation, over to you. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you.
Honorable Chair, with your permission, I will answer some of the questions and I'll refer to the rest of the delegation where there's more detail and depth required. I think just as a background, to understand that in the previous two financial years of its existence, IBER came into existence on the 1st of April 2012. So it's had two full financial years and now we're entering a third one. In that period, we've had instability in leadership because we have, for a very short period, had a permanent executive director until I was appointed in the last month of the last financial year, that is March this year. So there has been instability, and there's been also in that high at the senior management a vacancy rate because of the lack of leadership. Senior managers could not be appointed, and various attempts were made by my predecessors who were acting in positions to try and get that process underway. As a result, much of the underspending is directly related to senior management vacancies, and that's what kind of informs the rest of the problems which we're experiencing. So we're kind of behind about, if a full complement. And we had our, for example, our structure has only been approved 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago. So that is the kind of background in which it will impact on all the questions that have been asked. I think the reasons for the turnover, there are two reasons, but I'll ask my delegation. There are two types of turnover. The one in the administration, mainly secretaries and PAs, because of the level at which they function at exists at a higher level in other sister departments, because there is some dysfunctionality in the way our organization and the level at which our organization is pitched at. And also in regards to certain levels of investigators. So I just asked Mr. Sissoko and Mrs. Netsihanda to just respectively add in on the issue of the high staff turnover, and then I'll go back to the other questions.
Thank you, Chairperson. The first question was the reasons for high staff turnover. We do conduct exit interviews when our officials give ITID. On the exit interviews that we've conducted, mostly the reasons of career growth, due to maybe more money that is offered elsewhere. Our executive director has indicated that some of our positions are lower than in other institutions. Like our investigators, the entry level is very low. So most of our investigators are taken by institutions like public protector, institutions like military ombudsman, and so on. So currently we are looking at our structure to check where are the gaps and see if we can request National Treasury to give us additional funding so that we can upgrade our position, so that we don't keep on training officials who will be taken, once experience taken by other institutions. So mostly it's career growth and lower salaries. Currently, we've got a draft retention policy. The purpose of the policy is to attract and retain talent within ITID. Currently, the policy is at negotiation level. We are consulting labor, we are consulting various stakeholders before the policy is approved. We've got the draft currently. It will include counter offer policy. Within the policy, we will have the counter offer so that where there is an official with the rare talent, experience, and qualities that we cannot afford as the institution to let go, we'll be able to counter offer that particular official. Also, the retention policy is looking at the conditions of services as well as the environment within ITID, so that ITID becomes the employer of choice, where we will be able to attract talent outside ITID and also be able to retain the talent within ITID. So this is as far as retention is concerned. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just on the issue, I'll answer a number of questions which some are different emphases of the same question. Provincial management, we're in the final stages of appointing provincial heads. On my second day of appointment, advertisements went out for all those senior vacant posts. So one of the first tasks I undertook as a new executive director was to begin the process of appointment. So we are in the final stages. We assume that by the end of August, all provincial heads will be appointed at the latest. The issue relating to public participation, awareness, vis-a-vis consultative forum. I think the consultative forum is a statutory body in terms of section 15, which is deals with recommendations on policy issues to be made to the minister. So it's not a normal public participation body. It's one that is co-chaired between myself and the Secretary for Police, in which we look at issues that are non-investigative related, which we experience from our different cases, which we can then have hearings on and make recommendations to the minister and hope that there become changes in policy or procedures. On the public outreach and public participation and whether it's effective, I'll ask Mr. Dlamini just to give some details about the types of public interaction and awareness we do from the communication side. And then I'll continue again.
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. We approach our outreach by setting targets for all the provinces. If you look at the presentation, we have 306 community outreach events that we have planned. That means it's about 34 per province. And the provinces are required to then identify areas where these outreaches will take place, and the focus is on rural communities. What we normally do is to have these engagements with the public, but also go further to use community radio on the very same day that we have an engagement with the public to also spread the message through community radio, and then follow that through with coverage in the local newspapers. We've got a template in which we assess or we record how many people attended our outreaches, but also what the focus of that was. We also have staff who will then take questions and also follow up if there are matters to follow up, for instance, such as particular cases that people want to be assisted with. We have staff who will, investigators, for instance, who will then take up complaints, record them, and then follow up and come back at a later stage to give feedback to the public. There was also another question on the media statements and responses. There, that is prompted mainly by cases that are reported in the media. For instance, in Limpopo, there's a video footage of someone being assaulted by the police. Well, then, as the IPG respond to that by sending our investigators to the scene to do an investigation, but also then communicate what it is that we are doing as an institution through the media, because the media approach us and say, have you seen this footage? What are you doing? As the IPG will respond. In the past, it was one target, but we have now split it. The target was 60 media statements and responses, but we saw based on the experience of the past that it's important to then split the two. Have a target for media statements and another target for media responses. We've got a communication strategy in place that covers all of these issues, Chairperson. The template, all our provinces report on the template on a monthly basis. We keep track of which communities were visited and the extent of their reach. Thanks.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think in terms of how do we measure effectiveness of media campaigns, there isn't a clear yardstick to measure it, except one can compare the knowledge of the general public about IBRIT last year as opposed to this year. Whereas last year, many people didn't know what it was. With a media campaign which involves municipalities and provinces and regular interaction, together with the campaigns on the radio in indigenous languages, the outreach has had an impact we can feel also in the sense of number of reports we receive. So we've actually become, in a sense, victims of our success of outreach, because we've had a heavier load before we are having the capacity to carry that load. So there's more reports being made, there's more public awareness of the role of IPED, and there's more reliance on IPED to deal with matters. On the important question of what is our target for full complement, in terms of our strategic plan, briefly, what we did an analysis of the number of stations in the area, the number of clusters in the area, of police clusters, number of policemen that are present in particular areas of the provinces, and we looked at geographic distance between major centers, we looked at population density, and we looked at historic intake, and we basically worked on two concepts. One is a regional office and a district office. A district office is, in effect, is a bigger office than the regional office. And to answer directly the question, we've worked out that we'll require around about 750 people for full complement status. That is only 200 more than the initial approval of our predecessor organization, the ICD. So it's very reasonable, and we've managed in our proposal to cut all relevant fat out of it. That is the bare minimum of a full complement status, is 750 people. We are in the process of finalizing the costing of this. Roughly, Ms. Nathalie, what is the costing? Or CFO? I'll come back to the question, sir. Chairperson, we are very careful not to just throw out the figures when we haven't fine-tuned it. But we are looking in the region of about 60 million rand over the MTF period, and hoping to achieve full complement status over the MTF period. So that's what we're looking at. But it hasn't been fine-tuned, so kindly bear with us that we haven't finalize the costing, and it's dependent on our interactions with the Treasury, which we have already begun to engage with. So they are our bosses in terms of the allocation, obviously with your support. But that is our full complement status that we are targeting. And then just an explanation on satellite. Satellite stations were the stations set up mainly to have a presence, a point of contact in the areas where we've been experiencing high case intake. And we've had no presence there. So the investigator would hear that a policeman has shot someone 3 o'clock in the morning. He had to leave his home here in Cape Town and travel all the way, for example, to George or Frenda. And as such, we had to have some kind of presence there to avoid the long journeys at all different hours of the night. So that's what the satellite is there, just to cover base and to have a point of contact. So we realize that it's not sustainable in the long term to have satellite stations, because it will keep implementing by piecemeal. And the whole purpose of IPED is to have an oversight over the police and to reach the stage of full complement to be able to fulfill our mandate. And if we wait at the rate of satellite stations, it will take us 20 years, and we can ill afford to have full complement in 20 years' time. On the issue of uniformity of investigations, the issue why is there a problem and what are we doing about the problem and why we are coming to cry before you, it was merely giving you an environmental scan of the problems that we are experiencing. Uniformity, to a large extent is related to the movement from complaints orientation to investigation orientation. And remember, significant amount of our investigations go to the NPA. So there has to be a reorientation of our investigators to investigate for purposes of prosecution also. So as a result of that, we developed standard operating procedures and criteria of assessment to submit the documents to the NPA and to the National Commission of Police, where it involves disciplinary measures. Sometimes it's both prosecutorial and for disciplinary. But in that process, some of the SOPs were not complied with, and hence the lack of uniformity in the standards of the investigation or recommendations. Now, one of the honorable members asked about the quality of the recommendations. Our quality of recommendations is not at the level where it should be. We are having some experience. We have done some corrective measures in that. Part of that is visiting provincial offices and taking samples of the case dockets, looking through them to see whether they comply with our internal prescripts and SOPs. And in terms of the question asked about whether we use consultants, no, we don't use consultants for compliance issues. It's internal. And on that, I'll move to the unfunded mandates. The key issue there was that the Act makes, but the Act prescribes certain capacity must be attained by IPED. For example, you cannot appoint an investigator unless he's gone through a pre-screening process. In order for us to be able to do that, we need to have a unit to be able to function with that. The Act makes provision, I think Section 9D, for us to gather, analyze, and store information relating to investigations. You require a unit to be able to do that. And then something the Act makes no provision for, but logic would tell us is needed, is the capacity to protect our investigators who go out and do dangerous investigations. If I can put it this way, every criminal syndicate that functions in the country requires a policeman to make its criminality work. So once it involves a policeman, means they are in our targets. But people won't just stand aside and let us interfere with their ill-gotten gains. There will be some pushback. That's half of the course, that's our job, that's what we elected we're going to do, and that's what we committed to do. And in that process, we need to prepare ourselves for the pushback when it comes, because you're dealing with the high level and sophisticated corruption and systemic corruption involving policemen, there will be consequences for us. What we have done then is to juggle our allocation of last year. Unfortunately, I was appointed at the end of the financial year. The result meant there was very little input in the budget allocation from my side as a new head of the organization. The second issue is that we were between administrations. The new administration has different priorities. For example, the cabinet Lekotla established the Inter-Ministerial Task Team on Corruption. That means we have to be sensitive to the reprioritization and give ourselves capacity to deal with it, which impacts also directly on, for example, our human resource plan. Now, last year it was not submitted, mainly because of the instability. We are still to submit this year our human resource plan, but we are now infusing the new reprioritized strategic direction of the new administration, and we have to take into account the new changes. health and safety. Health and safety, the reason is we didn't have a budget for it. We didn't have anyone appointed. What we're doing to mitigate our security, we have 3 security officers. We are training some of them in health and safety to be able to cover it in order to mitigate the omission that is there. Honorable Chair, I'm aware that you have time constraints, so I'm trying to move as fast as possible. In dealing with senior police officers accused of wrongdoing or criminality, we deal with them quite sensitively and with due concern to the fact that they could be placed in the same cells as people they arrested yesterday. We insist on detention only where such a police officer could interfere with our investigations or poses a threat to witnesses, that we then insist on detention when we do the arrest. I just want to cover quickly. So I say, how can you deal with the expenditure and the fiscal dumping issue? Thanks.
Chairperson, I think the Executive Director has really highlighted some of the major causes of underspending, and particularly the quarterly spending trends, which also concern the department. We have noted with concern ourselves the delays in implementation of quarterly spending operational plans, particularly due to the vacancies that were experienced at the senior management positions. Our 9 provincial heads, our program managers, which highly impacted on the ability of the department to thus spend on time. There were also numerous vacancies experienced at other levels, and those positions were filled in the later half of the financial year, which resulted then in that peak expenditure at the end of the financial year. So we've also noted it with concern at the department, and we are moving swiftly to ensure that vacancies are filled timely so that we don't experience the same trends within the financial period. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm not sure if there's any questions I left out, but I also don't want to stay on too long. I know you have time constraints, so just kindly direct me.
Thank you very much. Are you covered, Honourable Members?
Yes,
you are covered. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. McBrown and your team. And thank you, Honourable Members. I know you are busy. This is it. But thank you for... Thank you. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.